Oh, okay. Well, usually we have a little music, but that's okay. We can start without it. I'm a big boy. I got my grown-up pants all on today. So no short pants today. We're kicking right into the show. And it is one heck of a time in Northport, Florida today. There is everything in the world going on. Robert, we've got the Blind Tarp and Robert here across from us. RJ was in a car accident, we found out. And he is okay, but he's got a little neck problem, and he's got to go see the doctor. And hopefully all that's not too bad. So we'll be looking for RJ to get back here as soon as possible. Glad he's okay. Robert, you were out with the Sawfish guys.
Yeah.
You went out to see what was going on. What was going on out on the water with the Sawfish guys? What part were you guys doing out there?
We were trying to hopefully catch a couple of them. Even one would have been great to tag them for research. They're doing a couple different types of tags on them. They do the streamer tag, which is for anyone to see if they catch one so they can get the numbers off of it. But they also do a tag internally where they surgically open them up on the bottom of their belly and enter a sounding tag that is in the little open cavity underneath the skin. And there's these transponders basically all over the harbor, intercoastal, nearshore reefs.
What they have is the thing they put into the fish and they insert into them emits a pulse tone or sound. And they're usually emitting a number like 4425 or 6687. And when the fish pass by a microphone, it picks up that signal and says, okay, 4425 was here. Or, you know, and then when it gets close to another listening device, then they can figure out what direction of travel it was going by, which one it went to. They got to go out and download all the information of all these things. And they do it with sharks. They do it with sawfish. They do it with redfish, snook. They do it with a lot of different species. And one of the more interesting times that I remember is when they were first starting it, Robert and I would go out and we would have the tracking device on the boat and we would go out and literally follow these fish. After redfish tournaments, they would put these transponders in the fish, and we would literally be in the boat trying to find them. We'd pick them up, and then we would follow them to see where they would go during the rest of that day. And a lot of them just stayed right where they were released. Some of the redfish would literally go right to the middle of the harbor and just take off.
Yeah.
Everything I thought I knew about redfish kind of blew up in proportion right there, because you think of a redfish as just going along the shoreline. Okay, he's released, he's going to get out of there, and he would go along the shoreline going back to wherever he was. But some of them would just shoot right for the middle of the harbor. They would go out, and we'd lose them out in the deep water, go back, try and find another one. But what I think surprised me the most is probably 25-30% of them stayed right there for literally days after they were released. And we would go back in a week and we would tag some of these fish that were there, and you could tell one or two of them were dead because they didn't move at all.
Right.
But some of them would be at the front of the place and other ones would be a few hundred yards down. And then we would go along the shoreline, go in and out of the canals, and we would find them in some of the different canals. And then we'd go down around the flats and pick up more of them out there. But I think what surprised me the most, and that's kind of what I expected, I didn't really expect them to kind of go into the different canals and kind of stay there. I kind of figured they would meander all the way back out into the harbor, but
yeah,
a very small percentage.
A lot quicker than they did.
Yeah, a very small percentage actually just kind of blew by the canals and all that. And there was probably, 10% that just kind of went back along the shoreline, 10% that went to deep water and just went out in the middle of the harbor like, hey, I don't want no part of this. Aliens got me. You know, hey, Fred, it was an alien. You wouldn't believe it. Great big, they had big eyes, and there's all these long tentacles coming off their fins, you know. They grabbed me, and I don't know what they stuck in me, but, you know, I'm telling you, I got something in me, and you may not believe it, but, I, you know, these aliens got me. All right, let's see. We got, so did you guys catch any sawfish?
We did not.
No.
No.
What were you using for bait?
Ladyfish.
Live or dead?
Live.
You had live ladyfish and still nothing, huh?
Nothing. Nothing at all, which was the surprising part. We didn't even get any drive-bys by sharks or catfish or nothing.
I'm going to call that just bad luck. That's pulling the slot machine handle and coming up, you know, lemons, limes, and oranges. No three rows of grapes.
Well, we were fishing for a unicorn, basically, you know, so the chances of catching one were pretty slim.
Yeah, but with live ladyfish, I would have thought you caught something.
Yeah.
Sharks, tarpon, whatever.
Well, and that's where that comes into play with, you know, why we weren't catching some of the fish we kind of got figured out.
The word of the day, boys and girls, do. Water hypoxia, hypoxic water. The water is hypoxic. Now, Mr. Encyclopedia, what does that mean?
No oxygen.
Yeah. You know, if you guys are watching the news, you saw some divers going down and they found this area out in the Gulf of Mexico with all this dead stuff and everything was there. And it's really nice they found that again.
Yeah, really.
I mean, we've known about that, I know 10 years, but I think 15 years.
Oh, yeah, at least.
Off of the Mississippi River up by, you know, Mississippi, Louisiana. Where that meets the Gulf of Mexico, there's a huge dead zone created there from a lot of the nutrients, the decaying stuff and all that. And it's basically on a satellite, a pretty big black area.
Yeah.
Well, about 10, 15 years ago, that showed up off of the Coosa-Hatchee. It's a big river because the Coosa-Hatchee goes into Lake Okeechobee and is fed by the Kissimmee River and the Kissimmee River chain and all that up there. I mean, there's a lot of rivers and creeks going into Okeechobee, which feeds out then at the bottom end through, you know, among other things,
basically
the Coosa-Hatchee.
All of middle central Florida.
Yeah, it drains in through there and comes out. And so about 10, 15 years ago, it developed that kind of dead spot there in the Gulf. And it was there for a long time, and it kind of gets a little smaller and a little bigger. And every few years, the scientists rediscover it again for the very first time.
Yeah.
And now they've rediscovered it again for the very first time, and it's a big, big deal. And I think it could – most of the stuff with TV and the internet all revolves around politics in one form or another. They're trying to say this guy's a bad guy because he didn't do anything, but this guy's a good guy because he's been there for 30 years and he's going to do something. But this guy was there for 8 years and he didn't do enough, so get the guy who's been there 30 years because he's going to do something. And after 30 years, we do not have one congressman, not one senator, nobody who has done anything. So if they're saying this political party is bad and this one's good, they're both liars because neither one of them did anything.
No.
And they've been there for 30 years. Let's face it, it's all BS. And, you know, I'm sorry, I don't care which political party you are. You both, let's say, partake of the bottom of the udder of the cow. So, anyway, yeah, nobody in politics has done anything for the water, and it's not which one is going to do it or which one isn't going to do it. Neither one's going to do anything. They just all want to get elected. So don't believe the ads.
They all want a career.
What's that?
They all want a career.
Yeah, so it's not the Republicans' fault. It's not the Democrats' fault. It's both of their faults. They're equally to blame because the Republicans have been in charge of the state. The Democrats have been in D.C., they're both to blame. And anyone saying this one's more to blame than the other ones, well, sorry, equals. But getting back to the fishing, what went on is my son came to visit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last Friday, I picked him up at the Tampa International and drove down. And it was funny because even they called before and said, should we still come? You know, can we go by the water? Are we going to get sick? Some weirdos on TV telling buddy, if you're within a mile of the water, you're going to be sick and get microbes and all this. And I mean, my God, what an idiot. All right. Anyway, I said, fine, come on down. We got plenty of tarpon, sharks, all that kind of stuff. It's all right there in the harbor. So they come down Friday. By Friday, I picked them up like 10:30 in Tampa. By 2 o'clock, we were on the afternoon out on the water. We trying to catch ladyfish because you got to have live bait. Now, here's something that's an interesting theory. This is not something we had ever thought of before, and Captain Carl came up with this, who's up in Jacksonville pre-fishing a tournament right now. But we had, usually if you've got a dead ladyfish under a bobber or something like that, tarpon, and if you throw out chunks of ladyfish, the sharks usually hit them.
Yep.
I mean, we've been using dead bait on sharks as long as I've been fishing.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're not hitting dead bait. If we had live ladyfish out, the sharks hit it, the tarpon hit it, all that happened. We even had about a 4-foot gar down at Cape Hayes eat a ladyfish. And my son actually got him. We're thinking it's a little shark because, it's kind of dark and we can see it coming up by the surface of the water as it's going around and we're looking at it and we're going, man, you got a nice little shark there. And that's the slowest shark I've ever seen.
Yeah.
What? That's not a shark. What is that? And we get by the boat. It's about a 4-foot gar, freshwater gar. And big
all the way down at Cape Hayes, which is cool.
Yeah, big old hefty thing. What makes those gar get all the way down there is gar like to stay in that first 1 to 2 foot of water. They don't like sounding deep. They're not a deep water running fish. Salt's heavier than water. So if you have an area like Charlotte Harbor, if there's going to be any salt, the salt will be on the right by the bottom, and the freshwater will all be on the top. You would think it would mix more, but it really likes to stay separate as long as possible. The freshwater seems to go right across the top. Salt water goes down to the bottom, and it doesn't. I would think it all get together and mix, but
well, it does at certain points. But at certain points, it's just one's more dominant than the other. So it will separate itself. But, this time of year in the upper end of the harbor, it's completely fresh, and then it starts to dilute down and a little bit more and a little bit more as time goes on.
Yeah, but just in the like middle of the harbor in the deeper stops. Holes, they're loaded with bait. There's tons and tons of thread fins, glass minnows, white bait, all that small bait, and it's loaded up in the middle of the harbor. And I think they're hugging the bottom because it's salty down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
They like it better. So it just really does stay separate a lot longer than I would have thought. But salt is heavier than water. Pour salt into the glass. A little bit of it dissolves instantly, but a lot of it goes right down to the bottom of the glass.
Yeah.
And that's the easiest way I can tell you to see what I'm talking about, is just take a teaspoon of salt and pour it in a glass that you can see into, and you'll see most of it will go down and lay on the bottom. A little bit of it dissolves. Salt's one of those weird things. It's the only thing in the world that dissolves exactly the same rate whether you put it in cold water or hot water.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Sugar dissolves really quick in hot water. It takes forever to dissolve in cold water. But salt dissolves at the same speed whether it's hot or cold.
It's pretty interesting.
So, but anyway, getting back down there, we're catching ladyfish. We missed a big shark. His buddy Dunn had a shark on, and he's fighting it. Unfortunately, I think it was either a bull or a lemon. I'm thinking bull shark. But we had a tarpon leader on. So we had 60-pound fluorocarbon on, the hook on the end, and he had him hooked really well. And he's fighting him, gets him right up next to the boat. I didn't get a look at the secondary dorsal to tell if it was a bull or a lemon, but judging from the shoulders on it, I really think it was a bull shark. But he fought it for quite a while. I'm going to say 6-8 foot from the silhouette shoulders and stuff that I saw. I have a picture of the fin of it, but that's all I got was a picture of the fin. It's surprising how much more you can see with the human eye than what you can catch with a camera.
Yeah.
So anyway, miss that. We got low on ladyfish. We went back to, we lost some other fish, had a few hits, missed them. And so we go over by the east side. We're looking for more ladyfish that we can catch so we can catch some of these tarpon because they want sharks, they want tarpon. And so we had a couple of dead ladyfish on and nothing touched them. I mean, not a catfish, not anything hit them. And it was really weird. And that's when we started wondering, are the fish avoiding dead, you know, like, are the sharks and tarpon avoiding dead fish because of the red tide? If there's all these red, or all these dead fish laying out there that were suffocated with the red tide, you know, are the fish avoiding the dead bait because of the dead red tide bait?
It makes sense. I mean, it's an impressive thought, and maybe they're looking for stuff that's a little bit fresher, that they perceive to be fresher rather than...
Well, if it's alive, they know it's fresh.
Right. You know, maybe it's a different odor that's being put out, but also it could be the really dark water that all the scents are overwhelming out there because of the different dead fish that are all over the place out there, that they're honing more in on vibration than they are of something that's just sitting there with a lot of smell being exuded into a large area.
Now, what's really funny is the redfish will readily eat crabs cut into pieces.
Right.
Blue crabs, live, dead, but, you know, usually cut in half or ripped apart in some fashion, actually catching a lot more redfish than if you put a live crab out there, you know, a small live crab.
Right.
So with the exclusion of the redfish, which are eating the dead crabs, cut bait just doesn't seem to be working very well. We had to go back and find more live ladyfish. So we're going down the sandbar on the east side, and we're about halfway between Alligator Creek and Pirate Harbor. Outside the sandbar, I think Schmidt was throwing a Rapala subwalk. It's kind of like a topwater Zara spook where you're working it, trying to walk the dog with it, but it does that underwater. And all of a sudden, boom, hook up, about a 4-foot tarpon comes flying out of the water. And it was really weird because the tarpon comes up and then just goes perfectly horizontal. I mean, like in a perfect line with the top of the water. He doesn't jump straight up. He jumps up and goes almost flat, hangs there a minute, spits the hook, hangs there, and then goes back down in the water.
That would have been pretty strange to see.
It really was. It wasn't like, you know, how they come up and they're shaking their head and falling back or whatever.
Right.
Literally like a Michael Jordan, where this fish jumps straight up out of the water, levels out, the hook flies out, and then the tarpon gets like a half a second hang time, and then back down in the water. What was really weird is on a storm swim shad, the brown one with the clear belly with the white on it.
Okay.
Not the biggest one. I think the 4-inch. Carl hooks one, exactly same scenario. And it didn't dawn on me till just this moment, because when they came up out of the water and the fish went flat with the surface of the water, you know, pure horizontal, and the hook pulled, what if they were going up to do a normal jump, like jumping straight up, and when they... The guys on the rod, if they pulled, they would pull the fish nose down and flat, and the hook pops out. And that's maybe how they got, both of them got in the same thing, because both of them, the hook pulled right as that fish went flat.
I can see that happen. I mean, that actually makes a lot of sense.
3 to 5 feet out of the water.
And I mean, especially since Carl sets his drag to hate. You know, that I could see him stopping that fish in mid-jump and laying it over.
Yeah, but Schmidt did the same thing.
But it's still the same drag.
Yeah, it was Frank and Schmidt and Dunn. They all were in Iraq together a couple of times. They've been in the military together a long time. And Frank brought these guys down because Schmidt's getting married. So, but come to think of it, I think that's what was happening. These tarpon were jumping up in the air, and then they pulled... Like, I got you, and it popped the hook and just turned that fish sideways, and it just kind of laid there in midair for a bit, and then fell back in the water. So there was a lot of fish out there, a lot of ladyfish. There's some Spanish mackerel. There's tons of bait in the harbor. The harbor's great right now. But the next day, we didn't do that well. We went back into Ponce because big storms were coming up. We were kind of getting around them. And it was getting really rough. So we ended up coming back in. And Frank, we pull up. Frank takes a smaller ladyfish we had, pitches it right by the dock over there at Ponce, and nice snook pops out. You know, he pops out a nice snook right there. The guys up on the pier, One guy caught probably about a 25-pound black drum. He got a snook just a little smaller than the one Frank got. And so there was a lot of activity at Ponset, and that was last Friday night. But it was amazing how many fish they were catching there. Then if you go around the next morning, Saturday morning, we get out in the water. We get right off Whorehouse, Mangrove Point, and probably about a half a mile off, huge school of ladyfish. And we're sitting there. We load the live well up with ladyfish. Ladyfish love hitting that storm twitch stick. So easy to hook them up with that. But they were so aggressive, they were overbiting the treble, getting it down in their mouth. They weren't getting, like, one part of the treble hook in.
No, they were getting all of them.
They were eating the whole treble hook. So they weren't doing us any good. They were going to be cut bait.
Right.
Because we hadn't figured out yet that the fish weren't eating cut bait. So we switched over to the VMC hot skirt jigs.
Okay.
Those really seemed to do good. The white and blue ones were just amazing for catching these ladyfish. Real quick, you get them on, don't try and fight them, and keep your rod tip low to the water, reel in, and then when they get close to the boat, just kind of whip them up with the rod and get them over the boat so they'll jump right off the hook. They hit the deck, you pick them up, throw them in the live well, all good. They were living all day for us.
Well, that's pretty good. And it's amazing how well he keeps the ladyfish alive in his live wells.
Yeah, it really worked good.
He's got it set up just right, because some live wells, if you don't mess with them, they don't do very well at all, keeping them alive.
That VMC hot skirt seemed to be the ticket for keeping the ladyfish alive. They could actually jump off the hook. Once they were hanging in there, they would just fly right off the hook, toss them right in the live well. You weren't having to handle them, you know, to hold them to get the hook out.
Right.
They could literally jump right off of it. So it actually worked out really well. Now, we're going along, and we get down, catch our ladyfish, do all that. We go head down by Capes and put a line out. Boom. Tarpon blows up. Fish up out of the water. Spit the hook. Gone. Just getting that one in, kind of getting over that because, you know, it's a bit of excitement. Fish up in the air, you know, you got all that stuff going on. And then the other rod takes off and Schmidt's on the rod. And this fish takes off with a vengeance, comes up out of the water. And just not even a full jump, really. But you know how when they kind of come out of the water about three-quarters away, but their tail's still in, and then lay over right away?
Yeah.
Kept him on through that, went down. He got his head and shoulders out of the water, shook back and forth, went back down in the water. That was the last. It was almost two jumps. Neither one of them was really a full jump. And you know what that means.
Yeah, that's not fun. That was my first tarpon.
That was your... And so...
I didn't even get even a half a jump out of mine. So, that he's
down
in for a work.
And dirty bulldogging.
Yes.
And, I mean, you're sitting out there and you're like a cowboy trying to bulldog because you're just holding on. So, for about 20 minutes, I didn't even start the boat. He had plenty of line left. Carl had, you know, really nice size, I think a 65 or 7500 slammer, and he had a lot of line on it. Probably, I would guess it probably holding about 400-450 yards. So I'm watching the spool, and he's down, he's got a good 200 yards out, and he's dragging the boat just fine and going along, and Schmidt's doing a real good job. He's pulling up with the rod, reeling down, pulling up, reeling down. Hey, RJ! How are you, sir?
I'm a little woozy, but I'm here.
You look pretty good. You know, we heard about the car accident, and, you know, I'd say you're a little woozy. Don't let that chair get the best of you, buddy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, anyway, we were talking about my son's buddy, Schmidt, Frank's buddy, at Tarpon on, and about... For the first 20 minutes, he's just pulling back on the rod and reeling down, pulling back on the rod, reeling down. He's just getting it, and he's not making much headway. And then all of a sudden, about 20 minutes in, he gets him up. We can see the bobber come up because we had live ladyfish about 5 to 6 feet below a bobber, big float. Those new big floats I bought with the straight pin,
yeah.
You take the straight pin out and use the two pins from the oval floats
right.
and do that, they're awesome. With the straight pin in them, they suck. But if you take the ones from the 39-cent bobber and put them in there, amazing float. It works perfect on tarpon because it's a big bobber that you can actually keep a ladyfish up with. But anyway, we see this big red bobber coming up, getting right by the surface. Schmidt gives a big pull, and the tarpon kind of turns to come back at the boat. All right, Carl goes up to the front. I start the motor. We're going to go up. He said, boy, this fight's going to be short. Nope. He got, that was as soon as he kind of come up, maybe gulped some air, and that fish took off again. Now, mind you, Carl sets his drags pretty heavy anyway.
Yeah, to say the least.
So we're thinking, okay, it's only 20 minutes in. What's the big deal? You know, okay, he's going to pull some more line. So I back the boat back to neutral, and the fish starts running out. And once again, about 15, 20 minutes later, see the float at the surface, see the tarpon kind of going along the surface. Okay, start the boat up, get up real close to him, get ready. Carl goes to reach, and that fish takes off again. And this was the story time after time. I thought, okay, maybe what I can do is put the boat in reverse. I'll try and drag this fish a little bit. You know, and Schmidt on the rod, I mean, now he's been on there for an hour. I got the boat in reverse. I stayed in reverse for 10 minutes.
Wow.
Trying to drag the fish backwards. They said, well, why were you following the fish? I said, because I tried 10 minutes reverse. The float comes up. We stop. We get even close to it. The fish takes off. And literally about every 10 to 20 minutes, about every 15 minutes, for 2.5 hours. All right, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes into the fight. Poor Schmidt's almost dead at this point. He finally lets Dunn take the rod, and Dunn was on the rod for probably 10, 15 minutes, and I would say 15 minutes, and Carl and I are looking at each other. I mean, this is 2.5 hours in, and the fish is showing no signs of letting up. I've run the boat left, and I do better when the boat's to the left of the fish, when the fish is off my right. I can see better with the way Carl's boat is because his trolling motor's on the left. So I'm going around. Carl said, well, go the other way. Let's see if we can drag him over. So I'm pulling the boat with the fish off the left side of the boat, trying to drag him to the right. And then we go back. We try and drag him to the left. I'm using the boat, doing every trick I can think of to try and bust this tarpon. So finally, about 2 hours and 15 minutes in, Schmidt's on the rod. And I look at Carl and say, it's make it or break it. This is it. Lock him up. And, you know, we pull, you know, he pulls, you know, the fish pulls, we pull. Whoever pulls the hardest at this point is going to win.
Right.
So we get Schmidt back on the rod because he had over 2 hours on that rod. And Dunn gave him a nice break, you know, give him a little time to relax, shake his arms off.
And get some blood flowing back into those hands again.
Exactly. So get him back on the rod. Carl cranks down the drag, and the fish starts pulling it, pulling drag.
Starts now, pulling more drag.
I could not pull the line off of that reel with my hand. I was holding the reel in one hand, grabbed the line in the other hand, and pulled when the fight was over, and I couldn't get line off there. I could barely get line off with my hand. It was cutting in big time.
That's pretty tight.
So, I mean, this is a heavy-duty reel, and the fish was taken out like it wasn't even there. I mean, zzz, you see the line going out. So Carl and I say, okay, this is it. Make it or break it. Schmidt's back on the rod. We get him up, hold it off to the right, and I run the boat up. I say, reel, reel, reel again. And I get the boat, the nose, right up next to the line. Carl grabs the line and starts pulling it up hand over hand while Schmidt's reeling. And he had to let go. The fish just went away before he could get to the leader, pulling drag out. After 2 hours and 2.5 hours, he gets up to the leader. And now once Carl's got that leader, he's not letting it go. He's going, hold that rod, hold that rod. And all Carl's getting further and further over the side of the boat because he won't let go. He's going to get that fish up. And just as Carl's face is heading into the water, I reach over, grab him by the shorts, and I'm pulling out his shorts. I get him back out. His face, half his head is underwater. He's still got a hold of the tarpon. I'm holding on to his pants. Now he's starting to slip out of his pants. Carl's a skinny little guy. I don't think he's got much butt to hold that pants on there, you know? And I had to get one hand off of his shorts, his belt line, grab him by the back of the shirt. Now I got one hand on his shorts, one hand on the back of his shirts. Carl's head and shoulders are now underwater because he won't let go of the stupid tarpon. It's literally drug half him underwater.
Was he yelling at the fish while he was underwater?
Oh, yeah. In such, he would have made any old naval person proud at that moment.
Oh, you know? I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And it, coming from underwater, it was even funnier. I finally get Carl back up above the water, back up mostly into the boat. He's still got a hold of the tarpon, fights him up, gets him. We only have time for a couple of pictures because they're holding the mouth of this fish. Get the hook out. We're holding them. We're thinking, okay, this is going to be 15, 20 minutes worth of resuscitation, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he jumps right at Schmidt holding the tarpon. And Carl's like, can you hold him? I can't hold him. And he just takes off, and he doesn't go sound down. He goes across the surface for a bit and then goes down.
So he was really still fired up and ready
to
go.
He was mad. I call that fish El Diablo. El Diablo is alive and well, living in Charlotte Harbor. This fish is out to hurt people. He's angry. He's mad. He could be on drugs. We don't know. But El Diablo lives in Charlotte Harbor, and he's still there. Now I got all that out. I didn't want to stop in the middle of it. RJ, what happened to you, buddy?
I got rear-ended on the way off to Tampa yesterday, and I'm still...
And I'm assuming not in a fun way.
No, definitely not in a fun way. And so I'm still recovering. I, you know, got a little neck soreness, a little dizziness.
What did the doctor say?
I went for x-rays, and I had to go for an MRI tomorrow, and I'll know a little more after all of that.
Yeah.
But they all said, you know, mild concussion takes 3-4 days for you to come to full... flayed on it, and then it'll start to taper off. So this is only day two.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you're all right.
Yeah, me too.
We're glad you're here.
Yeah.
We're very happy you're here. I didn't expect you on the show today. What'd you do, get really bored?
No, I was in between appointments, so I figured I got an hour or two until the next one, so no sense sitting around in a doctor's office. I came back here.
Oh, awesome. So... anyway, that was kind of my tarpon adventure. Just goes to show you, you never know what a fish is going to do. I would say the average fight on a tarpon is about 40 minutes.
Yeah, 30 to 40 minutes is pretty much standard for...
40 to 45 minutes I usually give.
Yeah.
30 minutes, I think, is really good time.
Well, just the way he sets his drag and how good of a teacher he is with teaching people how to fight fish, I'm gonna go with a little bit on the shorter amount of time. Well, I mean, he's always surprised me with how he sets his drag on those reels. Because I fight mine a little bit less.
Yeah.
And
you know, people think you want 40 pounds of drag on a reel.
No.
Tarponer actually fought between 8 and 13 pounds of drag.
Yeah.
That's where most real humans can actually hold the rod. It beats the tarpon. You don't lose the fish. If you put 40 pounds of drag on the tarpon, it's going to rip the rod out of your hand. You're going to break the tarpon's neck or rip his jaw off.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I can tell you, we were easily in the 30s on that pen with the drag cranked down as much as we had where I couldn't pull it off.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it was well over easy 30 pounds of drag.
That's crazy.
And the fish was still pulling drag.
That's impressive.
Yeah, what impressed me was Schmidt actually holding onto the rod when it goes. The poor guy, he was, after, you know, a little over 2 hours, because, you know, Dunn, his buddy, actually got up in there. And Frank's sitting by me most of the time. My hand, where my little finger meets my knuckle right there, I was running the throttle. And for 2.5, almost 3 hours, I'm running that throttle where you're holding it there the whole time. You're going forward a little bit. You're coming back. You're going in reverse. You know, and your hand sitting there up against it. My hand was sore for 2 days after that, just from having to run the throttle. And I wasn't holding the top of the throttle. I was actually holding it down at the base. And, man, that hurt. What are the redfish doing right now?
Redfish are actually doing very well out there. The west wall has got quite a few singles and doubles up and down the whole shoreline and out on the flats and even in the trough. We're getting some schools popping up here and there. Mangrove Point's had a couple of schools, but they haven't been consistent. There's been a couple of schools on the east wall and below Burnt Store, and even that one school inside Turtle Bay. But I haven't been getting consistent reports of those guys, but there's a lot of singles and doubles, east wall, west wall, Turtle and Bull Bay. You know, and like you mentioned earlier, crabs is the number one bait going, and then shrimp, and then pinfish, live or cut up, are working really well also. But crabs and shrimp are the mainstay. Everyone's doing consistently well. That's what they're using for their bait. If you want artificials, spoons are the key thing right now. It's kind of goes against the grain of what we normally teach people this time of year as far as using smelly, soft plastics and stuff like that. Always in September and early October, for some reason, they really do well on spoons. And the funniest part is it's even smaller spoons, because most guys throw a half or a three-quarter ounce spoon for redfish and snook throughout the year. This time of year, for this month and a half to 2 month range, it's a half ounce or a quarter ounce.
No, I would say even down to an eighth. I would do a quarter or eighth. I think half is pushing the size limit too much. They're keyed in on little tiny stuff, and they just don't want those bigger spoons. If you really want to catch redfish with a spoon, go to quarter ounce to eighth ounce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be my more preference, without a doubt. But it's surprising how well they hit on that.
All right. To get back to something we touched on earlier, we talked about hypoxic water, which means very low oxygen levels. And this is nothing new, and maybe something has to do with the red tide, maybe it doesn't. There's no way to correlate the two. Could the red tide be making it a little worse? Because as the red tide algae decays, it's the dying, decaying algae from the red tide that burns up a little more oxygen. Could that be doing it? Yes. Could it be a lot of other things? Absolutely. But it's not uncommon in Charlotte Harbor during the summer to have a lot of fish die from a lack of oxygen. This has been going on ever since I've been here. And I learned about it years ago, and no one could figure out why all of a sudden we'd have these fish die off. And they'd be out in the flats, and all of a sudden there'd be just dead fish there. And you're like, what the heck is going on? And you're thinking, you know, oil spills, some gas spill, or pesticides. Pesticides used to be the big theory.
Yeah. Well, it happens a lot in freshwater lakes.
Well,
so people would associate it with
this
that.
No oxygen in the water happens a lot in freshwater and saltwater.
Yeah.
Now, the way you said it was kind of like pesticide spills in freshwater was killing the fish.
No, I'm sorry. But that's one of the main blames in freshwater lakes is the pesticides because it's so common in freshwater lakes with the hypoxia.
Okay. So what happens is they didn't really realize what was going on until somebody tested the water and found there was no oxygen in it. So they retested the water. No, wait a minute. There's oxygen here.
Yep.
And it literally can be gone for a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes out of the course of a day, or even hours.
Yep.
But when it's that 5 to 10 minute no oxygen, that's really hard to find that for the first time, because you've got to be there
at
testing the water almost every 5 minutes, day in and day out.
Yeah, you have to be there at that exact moment, because I mean, it literally can happen for just a couple of minutes. And
the first time,
how long can the average person hold their breath?
Well, very few creatures can hold their breath 5 minutes.
Right,
almost none. So once the water's gone for five oxygen, those fish are dead. Now, that's why we believe that when they spray for weeds around freshwater lakes and all that, they kill a tremendous amount of fish, because while the substance itself is not that toxic, it kills the plants which go into the water, which decay, suck the oxygen out of the water for only a few minutes at a time. But I don't know a bass in the world that can hold its breath for 10 minutes.
No, not at all.
But it was one scientist who happened to be by a lake and found there was no oxygen in the water, and then had to go back again and again and again to find that again. Because why would there be no oxygen? Well, the decaying plants, and it's a very random occurrence. And this is hypoxia. And people are blaming this on the red tide and everything else. And maybe, but I don't think so, because when Charlotte Harbor in the summer, the water gets really hot. It's very low oxygen anyway. Then you have some algae and plants decaying, and then you get still time when the wind dies for just a little while. And boom, the water from the bottom might come to the top. The water goes from the top to the bottom as it gets colder with the rain. They call it when a lake rolls over.
Yeah, rollover effect.
Yeah.
And that's real common when you get tropical depressions. I mean, late afternoon thunderstorms. I mean, a lot of our late, you know, people get so bowed up about tropical storm coming or a Category 1 hurricane coming. That's not a big deal because some of our afternoon thunderstorms are as strong or stronger than a Category 1 storm.
Oh, absolutely.
But it only lasts 10 minutes instead of several hours, so they freak out about it. But having that effect come through the harbor between all the fresh water pouring down, bringing all these nutrients, all the rain pushing off dead leaves and sticks and whatever else, and on top of that, freshwater organisms like freshwater fish, tadpoles, all that stuff gets washed down, hits a certain point of salinity, that stuff dies. So you're adding all these different nutrients into the water column, and then they settle on the bottom. Perfect water temperature, warm water. If anyone knows anything about composting, you can have a compost pile in February, and it's 85 degrees, 90 degrees in the middle of it, sometimes even 100 degrees. That's how mulch fires start or hay bale fires start. It stays real warm in the middle. That stuff on the bottom gets warm with our warm water. It decomposes at an alarming rate. And if you have that flashover where it kicks off, it'll suck all the oxygen out. And it might be in a very small, isolated spot, like, say, the size of a swimming pool. Or it might be in a large area of maybe a couple of hundred yards or even a couple of square miles.
Now, Boca Raton Pass had almost no oxygen while you were there the other day.
Correct. It was at a 1.1 or a 1.2, which is hypoxic.
Yeah, there's that means there's not enough for anything to live in it. And people were seeing a lot of crabs, like you saw crabs up on the beach right at the surface.
Yeah, yeah, we saw the calico crabs, which are a bottom-dwelling crab, sitting up on the rocks just under the surface out of Boca Grande. And the only reason we can figure is they were getting up off the bottom because of when they chested the dissolved oxygen the other day when we were sawfishing, it was virtually zero on the bottom and it was higher up on the top. It still wasn't perfect to what they consider 5.0, what is it, PPT?
Parts per thousand.
Parts per thousand is ideal conditions, but it was 1 point something and then it was 3 point something at the surface. So it was better, but not great.
No.
Those crabs were coming to the surface to breathe a little bit better. Plus, crabs can actually poke their heads out of the water, gather air as long as they can get oxygen across their little gills or
they
whatever.
They hold water inside of them.
Yeah.
So you can, it's quite common when you catch blue crabs and other ones to throw them in a box and then just throw a wet burlap bag over them. Because as long as they stay wet and the water inside them stays there, they can breathe in the air just fine. It's
absolutely
not until they dry out that they will die from being out of the water.
Absolutely.
But you said if you went up by, you guys went up by Bull Bay, and the oxygen count was way better.
Yeah. We went from Cape Hayes down to Danger Reef and then just south of Danger Reef, and it was a 1 point something. They moved over into by Gallagher's Cut, and they were in the high threes, almost four range in that little bit shallower water. So, and he had the same reading in Matt Lachey when he was there earlier that week. Of, I think he said it was like 2.0 or 2 point something, which is still really low. And they didn't, they had the same thing, no fish. And the only reason why he checked it is because when he got there, I said, well, it's an outgoing tide. We've already been fishing for 40 minutes. No runs, no nothing, but our ladyfish are dying in the first 10 minutes or so being down underwater. And he's like, okay, well, we ran into this in Matt Lachey. Let me check the dissolved oxygen content. And then he also said one of his other scientists was in Boca Grande Pass the day before and also got a 1.1 reading. I don't know if that was surface or down deeper, but in the pass itself, they were getting a 1.1 going on for basically no oxygen.
Right.
You know? And it's a normal occurrence. It's just sometimes, like you said, 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 days, you don't know how large of an area or how small of an area it'll happen, but it doesn't take but a couple minutes to kill fish with no air.
And I can honestly say, this is nothing new. We've been seeing it forever. We used to drive down to Flats. You could always tell when it was happening because there'd be gazillions of shrimp and little bait fish all hanging out the surface, trying to jump out of the water and hitting the surface of the water, trying to gulp air. And believe it or not, you could literally take your boat and with the outboard running, idle around that area and re-oxygen, put oxygen back in it because of the slosh of the outboard, moving the water, get it moving. Once the water's moving, it usually, these things usually always occur at the top of the high tide or the bottom of the low tide when the tide is sitting still. Once the tide's moving, it's very hard for that no oxygen to stay in one place. Yeah. But as the beginning of the tide, end of the tide is the times when you'll see those things happen. Now, black drum continued to be a big story around Charlotte Harbor. It's really becoming kind of a target fish for a lot of people. We're seeing them caught at ponds and all these other places. What's going on, black drum?
PGI and the 41 Bridge are the two main places where people are catching them with the most consistency. They're catching them on crabs, whole crab, half a crab, it doesn't matter. And then peel a large shrimp, peel the shell off of a large shrimp, and fish anywhere. I mean, you can fish blindly around some of the docks. If you're fortunate enough to have a really good side scan going up and down the canal systems or even along the pilings of the 41 Bridge, you'll actually pick up those black drum because they're usually almost always in small groups. You know, they'll be in two to as many as 50 fish in a group, so they're not real hard to find if you've got a good side scan. And yeah, then start concentrating in that area.
I'm going to disagree with you on one thing. The Port Charlotte Canal is especially back up New O'Hara, the Manchester and all that. There's a lot of black drum up there, but most of them are in that 12 to 18 inch range. Now, I think black drum's got to be at least 14 inches to keep, but that 18 inch is perfect eating size.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, that 18 really to 24 at the most, and it's just perfect size to eat.
And that you can use pieces of blue crab or just chunks of shrimp. When you go through our shrimp freezer, go through and find the bags with the big shrimp in them. Have you been remembering to order both kinds?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got both in there right now.
So one of the things is algae bean's doing pretty fair on them, not great. But even out around Placida, you've got a halfway decent chance at a black drum. They're just really scattered from elder breakfast all over the county right now.
Yeah.
Lemon Bay not doing real well. They had a little bit of a red tide event again. We've had a little bit of patches of it on and off, but it seems to be kind of drive-by hits right now, not yeah. as devastation. Different areas, different effects. Redfish and snook are closed until the middle of May.
Aren't snook closed anyway in May?
Yeah, but redfish and snook are closed till next year in May. And it's a political decision. It has nothing to do with the stock assessments. It has nothing to do with the biologists. And the only way I know this is I've called like six people from FWC and asked what the numbers were. What's the stock assessment? How is it different? Is it better? Is it worse? You know, did we lose a lot of fish? Didn't we? And they lock the numbers up. They're not telling anybody. And I promised all six of the people I wouldn't say who they are, but literally they can't see the numbers. And the only time you ever hide something is when you're going to lie about it.
Yeah.
That's how I do it.
I mean, if I want to say, okay, this guy's being a good guy because he's going to close this snook and redfish because it's the right thing to do, and you have no evidence to back it up, and probably evidence to the contrary, you don't let the numbers out. I want to know what the stock assessments are. I want to know how they compare to the last stock assessments and the ones before them. They have not given those numbers. I don't think they're going to. I think that if I had more money, I'd get a lawyer and do one of those freedom of information request things. But I've never seen them hide the numbers from stock assessments. To me, that's shady. That means somebody's doing something dirty. So, I don't know. I could be wrong. I could be a conspiracy theory nut, but...
You could be.
I could be.
But in this case, I think you're clean.
No, probably not. But, you know, I mean, I'm I'm probably just a whack job conspiracy guy. Let's see. Getting back. Offshore fishing still doing really well, boys and girls. You do have to get out. How far, Robert, do you want to go to be safe?
Right now, at least 15 miles, just to be on the safe side, because we've had an east wind the last 5-6 days consistently. So what little patches were right along the beaches have started to blow offshore a little bit. So if you want to stand the best chance, start at about 15 to 20 miles for the smaller stuff like your mangrove snapper, your porgies, your grunts, even some permit out there, some barracuda, you know, stuff like that's going to be at that range. But if you want your grouper or your amberjacks, honestly, 30 to 45 miles out, basically 100 feet or better. That's where it's been most consistent.
Now, we've heard once you're off in about 90 feet of water off of Naples, 90 feet off of Boca, there is some mahi-mahi out there. There's some permit out there. We've heard scatterings of cobia, stuff like that.
A few African pompano.
Some pompano. So the fishing out there isn't bad. And most people haven't been stopping before then anyway.
No.
So, and one thing I will tell you is red tide does not poison fish. No. I mean, this is a fact. They're not poisoned. They are suffocated. The red tide pollen or spores is a slight neurotoxin. It paralyzes soft tissue. Soft tissue like the gills of a fish, the throat of a human. Now, if you've got bad asthma, it can get in your lungs and cause you some real problems. But for normal, healthy people who don't have asthma or, you know, lung diseases, it's basically just a scratchy throat. But that's the pollen or spores trying to paralyze that soft tissue. And what it does with the fish is paralyze the soft tissue. And, I mean, you know, this is just the way it is. They're not poisoned. The fish in the Gulf are fine to eat. There is no blue-green algae in the Gulf of Mexico. It is impossible. It dies in salt water, for God's sakes. So if you get 5% of the salt of the Gulf of Mexico, why don't they just go down into the Cape Coral canals, open a box of Morton salt, spray it on the damn algae? Should die in a minute.
Yeah, why are they spraying a bacteria?
Why would you spray bacteria on it? You spray salt on it and make it die.
Right, exactly. Just get salt water and go around with a sprayer and spray it on top of it. That should take care of it pretty well.
Yeah, what does a dumbass redneck know? I'm not a scientist who wants to put more bacteria in the water to kill another bacteria.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And okay. With minimal results at that.
Yeah, I just, you know, two boats with a seine net tied between them and drag the stuff out of the canal. This isn't rocket science, boys. It's an algae. It floats there. You can drag it out with a net.
Use one of those construction cloths that they have to put out.
Yeah.
Just like you used when you did to the oil spill.
Yeah.
You know, you could drag that right out of the canal and push it out. Yeah.
Yeah, just run it around through the canal, get two boats, and just run it out, dump it out in the river. As soon as it hits the Gulf, it dies. It cannot mix with the red tide and create more bad stuff.
Yeah,
it's,
and they're
just stupid.
And they want to take it and pump it down into the wells and the aquifers and all that other stuff.
In more fresh water.
Yeah.
Put it out in the Gulf where it's dead.
Yeah, drag
it
out there.
Put it in fresh water. Make it grow more.
No, not real smart.
Boy, this takes a biologist to think of that one, doesn't it? You got to work for the government to think like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not real genius.
Yeah. Boy, you think somebody been locked in the back room of the government office a little too long.
They have a title of engineer.
Engineer, yes. Okay. let's see. Snook and Redfish is closed. Dipsticks. But basically, I would say right now the fishing's pretty good in the harbor.
It's very good.
I'm a little frustrated, probably a little angry over the whole thing. You know, but I don't mind losing, being able to keep snook or redfish to real science and real stuff, but not for political maneuvering.
No.
Not to get one guy elected or the other guy. But Fish and Frank here in the chair, the blind tarpon in the chair across from me, and our man RJ is still alive and well and in the KDW radio studio. And you poor unfortunates, you had to listen to this. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye. Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert. I'm going fish, fish.
fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.